Perth Football Podcast for another one of our casual football chat specials. In the series, we are talking to individuals and people who are part of the WA football fabric, understanding their story, learning a little bit more about them, about their love of football, about their contribution to the community, and thinking about the football here in WA and thinking about writing the story of football here in WA. You probably need to mention this man and the work and the team that he has, because I mean, you need one for the archives but also just for the amount of work and contribution that's been having. I've got, and listen, you're in for a treat here, we've got Jacob Alftenkamper to talk about his love for football, his involvement in the community, and just kind of like where it all comes from. So Jacob, look, thank you so very much. Really appreciate you actually taking the time to do this. It doesn't go unnoticed as well.
Yeah, cool. Thank you for having me.
Too easy. Look, we'll get started. So that's a very German name. Can you tell us about the origin of supposedly how the family gets to Perth and just the involvement with football as early as you can remember?
Yeah, yes, it is a German name further back. And but yeah, my parents basically came to Australia from Holland. My mum came over as a 13-year-old in 1962 with her mum and dad and brother. And by boat, and my dad came over by plane with a lot of stops, had to go to Melbourne first, then to Perth in 1967. And yeah, dad was only meant to be here for a short time, but ended up staying, met my mum at the Dutch Club in King Street in Perth on New Year's Eve, I think New Year's Eve 67, I think. And yeah, and then
the rest
they got
is history.
Together and yeah.
I love the similarities there, because like Australia, just by nature and by virtue of it, is very much a place where a lot of migrants kind of come in and start their families. And it ends up being this very important thing where you've got a taste and a flavour of home, where you have the Dutch clubs or the Greek clubs, the Italian clubs, and you find that bit of community. So I'm assuming that would have been very, very important for them, and they would have found some community with was the Morley Windmill set up around that same time as well, or was that a little bit later on?
Well, Morley Windmills was there. They were just called Windmills at the time.
Still played in orange as well?
Still played in orange. They would have played in orange, I'm sure. So yeah, there was a Dutch club, like I said, in King Street, which they obviously went to. And my dad, I think he told me he went to watch maybe the odd Windmills games here and there, but certainly as he got to know my mum and then started a family, it wasn't really, you know, he loved the game, but it wasn't the priority at the beginning.
And so where does that passion and love for football come about? Because your involvement in the football community here, your involvement with footballwa.net kind of suggests that you really care about this thing. This isn't something that you would kind of like do half-ass. So where does that all originate from?
Oh, started very early. As I remember, my dad, we would go to games early. My dad and my mum bought a house in Bowger in 78. I was only 2 years old. He went to games, first team games, probably pretty early. As soon as I was young enough to start juniors, he would bring me down to Valga. I would start playing juniors. I think under eights was the earliest grade you could play back in those days. And I think I played under eights 2 years, so I started a year earlier. And yeah, that's how I got involved there. And yeah, me and Dad would watch first team games when I was that young. I can't even recall. And yeah, that's how it happened.
Do you remember any of the players from back in those times? Any of the stars that you kind of like grew up watching, or any of the matches that were happening in the league at that time?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think the year 1984, when we got promoted, with Stephen Skeets, a former state player, did well with Olympic prior to that. Ray Islett, who ended up being our player coach the year after that. Willie Kelly. We had the Burke family, who was the premier, and his sons played for all our clubs, like Tom Burke, Peter Andrews. There was a host of players that I remember watching.
And so then you, like, what I do know about you is that there is kind of this dual love. Bowger on one hand, Morley Windmills was on the other hand, and I just wanted to give the listeners a little bit more perspective into that, because it's pretty cool that you actually have two clubs that are close to your heart, so to speak.
Yeah, well, Morley Windmills came a lot later. Obviously, being a Dutch club, being a Dutch family, we always had a soft spot for them. But we certainly, as a kid, I certainly never remember going to watch them unless Bauga played them. It happened more so afterwards when Bauga was forced out of the Saturday League in the late 90s, as were Morley Windmills and a couple of other clubs, because they wanted to streamline the competition. And so basically the following year, as you could imagine, Saturday afternoons, after watching your team play that Saturday afternoon, you didn't know what to do with yourself. We went to a game here and there, and we didn't know. And it wasn't until, I think, Morley Windmills re-entered the competition in 2001, I said to Dad, well, why don't we just go and watch them, you know what I mean? And so we didn't watch them every week, you know, watched them now and then. And as the years passed, we got a bit more involved. We got asked to join the committee. I first said no. Then Kalhofsky kept on, he was the president at the time, kept on insisting. I said, yeah, I'll join. I said, if Bauga ever would join, go back to Saturdays, I'm there in a heartbeat, just so you know. At that time, it didn't seem possible. And that's how my involvement came with them. I mean, Bauga was still always the mate, you know. I would watch them on Sundays if I could. Then I started working on Sundays, so that made it harder to watch them on Sundays. My dad would tell me the results. He would ring me. And, that's how basically that happened with Morley Windmills. And then, obviously, Bauga did go back to Saturdays eventually, so I went straight back. I still care for the club, but... yeah, Bauga's always been my main passion, always has.
That's so fascinating, and I don't think people like really, really understand the depth of this, right? So I went to the UK for a couple of years, and while I was there, it really like got installed into me how much this means to people, right? How fanatical it is. And, you know, I support Liverpool, they're on the other side of the world. You know, I don't have the exact same kind of connection towards them as the same people who've been there, whose dads and grandparents and who were part of the War of the Roses and all of that kind of stuff. But you had this passion with your father for this team that was your local team. Like, that's pretty incredible, don't you think?
Yeah, like I say, I mean, when Bauga went back to Saturdays, my dad,
And they were playing Sunday amateurs, mate.
Yeah. So, but when we went back to Saturdays, my dad at that stage was in the canteen at Morley Windmills with two other people, and he really enjoyed it. So he decided to stay, you know, with Morley Windmills, but he would still watch Bauga if Morley Windmills played far further away or whatnot. So, I mean, Bauga was always his main club still, there's no doubt about it. But obviously, Morley Windmills grew on him too, like it did with me.
That's community.
Yeah, and... But yeah, like I say, I mean, Bauga is definitely my main club, 100%. But after my dad passed away, we did start, thanks to our reserve coach at the time at Bauga, Richie Bryant. He suggested to start a trophy, Afton Cup trophy, for my dad, the John Afton Cup trophy. And it's played for the last few years each year.
That's awesome.
This year, because we're in different leagues, might be a bit tougher. We tried to organise a friendly, but... it's been tough to do that with the seasons not being on par. So we'll see if we can maybe play it in the end of the year,
Which team currently holds the trophy?
Morley Windmills, though.
That's exactly why you want to hold the game, so you can win it back.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I want to transition really quickly to the big thing that you were known for is footballwa.net, the website. When I first moved here, it was the kind of go-to place. Football West, we're doing a couple bits of writing, but in terms of getting a feed and a feel for exactly what was going on, interviews and everything like that, that was the place to go, footballwa.net. Where does this all start from? Like, how does this originate? Because I'm a big-time like history dork, and it was something that I cared about, so I naturally gravitated towards writing. But how did it kind of start for yourself?
Yeah, no, it evolved pretty early. I mean, I got the internet in 95 when I was a teenager, and the year after I'd planned on doing it, just didn't end up doing it. You know, I was interested in writing websites and all that, but didn't really. 97 then happened, and during the season I still hadn't done it yet, and by the end of the season I thought, oh, let's start doing it, you know. And I uploaded it then. That stage I just had some articles, I put league tables that I had from yearbooks. And yeah, slowly it got a bit bigger. Then Brett Klitschke joined in 2000, and he was very good with photographs, with articles, and he definitely helped the website grow a lot bigger. And yeah, I know, I thank him a lot for that. And yeah, then we got our own domain, which was at the time soccerwa.com.
Yep.
And then a few years after that, Peter Simcox also joined, and so it grew even bigger. And then with the when Football West started, with the whole changeover to the name Football, which I which I still call soccer.
Still call soccer, yep.
Yeah, and then we changed it to footballwa.net, and that's how that happened. And yeah, and we're to that point now where we've just kept on adding from the archives on, and then, and yeah.
You mentioned off air a story about you being in school and kind of like being really, really keen on the yearbooks. So can you tell us a little bit about that and how that kind of transitions and gives you that idea to move forward?
We, in high school, with form class, you had to bring books. And I didn't like reading novels or whatnot.
No one does.
And I had a mate who was also big into soccer, and I thought, oh, I'll just bring in the yearbooks, we'll just read them. And then, yeah, obviously got to a point where you kept reading the same thing, and yeah, you just sort of memorised it to a point.
How do you end up acquiring all of that kind of like history? Because again, ladies and gentlemen, like the internet isn't a new, like the internet is still a new phenomenon compared to how things go. And I remember in 1995, mum and dad got me this entire like Encyclopedia Britannica, and that's where I ended up finding out about teams like Blackpool and the FA Cup and this entire swath of information. So how did you get this information, and what was the process like getting this online? Because I can imagine it's not just a simple like copy and paste as it would be right now.
No. Well, like I said, I had to do, I had the yearbooks, which my dad had got probably since the 84 yearbooks. I had all the seasons from them, which I would manually do the tables. So I had 13 years to do, which I can't remember how long that took. And then a few years after that, Paul Tombides, who was the Soccer West Coast general manager, invited me to see their archive, their old yearbooks. And yeah, so I went into there, got as many yearbooks as I could find from the 70s, the 60s, photocopied the tables and added them to what I had. And yeah, just basically went from there. And obviously now you had Richard Crider do many of the books he did, particularly the Paddocks to Pitches, which is an awesome book. And so yeah, so we're fortunate we have that, because there are no more yearbooks, which is a shame. Because the internet, you know, something was all online. You don't actually have it on paper. Mm. So that's for future historians. We're fortunate that Richard wrote that book at least. And yeah, so that's how that happened.
Well, I suppose for me, I'm asking, why did you decide to do this? Like, why did you decide to document everything, right? Because that's a big time commitment. Were you kind of like frustrated with not being able to find certain things? Did your team go undefeated one year and you were trying to figure out if there's any other team that's gone undefeated? Like, where does the idea kind of come from to go, let's actually get this not only documented for the future with articles, but also go as far back in the past to make sure that people know that this is exactly what happened?
Yeah, I think after looking at all the yearbooks, and I think I enjoyed doing it, all the stats, and just coming onto the internet at that time too, I wanted a website too, and I was interested in making one, and I thought, well, why not do it on the sport I love?
Yeah.
And that's how that came out, because I enjoyed doing it, and yeah.
So then I am kind of transitioning it forward. How have you managed to keep doing this? Because I'm in a very different situation where it's starting off something that's pretty new, and you get to about the third year and people start to hate you, and all of a sudden the goodwill kind of wears off, so to speak. So how have you kind of like managed to keep that energy doing this? Because it is hard work, and I'm sure the missus, I'm sure the family, I'm sure other aspects of your life have kind of gotten the way sometimes.
Yeah, it was hard at first, particularly WASA and Soccer West Coast at the time when we started didn't like us. We were threatened with legal action because we did their fixtures and results, and they didn't want it on their website. Soccer West Coast basically did a turnaround and joined forces with us, basically. WASA didn't like us until they finished, but that was up to them.
They didn't like you. Did they see you as competition?
Well, I think so. We were promoting their league with the professional game, so it made no sense to us. But anyway, when they ended in 2004 and Football West took over, I mean, we've had a pretty good relationship with Football West, so that has been pretty good.
You would think they would go the absolute other way, where you've got someone else who's kind of helping and contributing to promote the game to do it for free, right? Like, you're not asking for anything else, and you're basically documenting the history and saying this is exactly what happened.
That's what we thought, and that's why I think Soccer West Coast came around. And I think if you see in one of their yearbooks, they actually, whether it's 2003, they actually have their official website, and had, which at the time we were known for, soccerwa.com. So they were, you know, happy to be partners back then, where WASA never really took that view. So
Casual Football Chats is a partnership between the Perth Football Podcast and the Casual Football Company. Casual Football Company run 25 casual games a week at venues across the entire metropolitan area. Casuals lets you rock up, play 90 minutes of non-stop football for $15 reduced. There are no referees and no one keeps scores. It's not the World Cup final, which means that you can have a nice casual game with your friends, with mates, or with strangers. Games are played simply for the love of the game. All players are welcome. Check them out on Casual Football on all social media places that you can find them. They also have an app that you can get on iTunes or on Google Play Store. And remember, hashtag play because you love it and hashtag keep things casual. I suppose the best thing about what you guys were doing at the time, and I'm sure it's still the exact same thing right now, is that I think a lot more clubs are by and large, more clubs appreciate it a lot more. And I think the format that you guys have been doing it, where, you know, you send the questions out, can you fill out these questions, we'll do the editing, that feels like a lot less work for yourselves. And it's almost made it as easy as possible for everyone else. And I'm sure a lot more clubs are happy to get involved and help out in that way as well.
Yeah, and that's a big thanks to Peter Simcox. He does all that work, you know, with the articles. And, the clubs have been very good. You know, obviously without the clubs sending that in, we wouldn't have a website either. So, you know, so we get a lot of support from the clubs, and you know, we've expanded the
work. You even do the glory games as well.
Yeah, Peter does the glory games. He's the women's, you know, over the last, since the NPL, even prior to that, I think. So that's one thing he's worked on. I do the league tables, all the first team reserves and under 18s.
Got to say, I appreciate the league tables because it comes out a lot quicker than any
like
other place.
I'd like to do more. I do obviously all the Saturday leagues and the amateur premier, and obviously doing all those leagues, they don't all come at the same time.
No.
So I've got to try to update them, and, you know, during the week. I'd like to do more amateurs and the women's, but just finding time is just impossible.
Mate, I'll tell you right now, the thing that I got told is you're doing enough. Yeah. Like, you're doing enough, and save your energy as much as you absolutely can, because you're absolutely doing enough, because they're like, people need to be grateful that on one hand, you know, there isn't enough, but on the other hand, it's more than was there beforehand.
Yeah,
right?
No, I appreciate that. And we still link to Squatty, which has definitely improved since last year. So to the other leagues, we still link them to our side to make it more navigable, you know, to do that. The website, we've thought about modernising the website more, where you have basically websites nowadays where you just have articles, you click on an article and then you want to see what you want to see. But a lot of people that I've talked to actually like the format where you just
scroll down.
And if you don't like it, you just keep scrolling.
Just scroll down,
it might
so
be
good.
More primitive, but from what I've liked, people seem to like it, so we've kept it that way. And it's probably easier on us too, because, you know, you don't have to have a million links there too for different articles. So
it's a lot easier for me to copy and paste and put it into a document so I can read it at work without the bosses thinking that I'm on the internet as well. So I appreciate you guys keeping that format.
And Brett still, even though he's taken some more of a backward step, he still gives us articles and all that. So, you know, he had no kids like I did when he first started. So obviously, you know.
Game changes when the family happens.
They've both been amazing. We've had other helpers come and go during that time, but it's, you know, this is now 27 years now, so which, yeah, honestly, it's hard to think about.
Huge kudos for you guys for doing this for 27 years. We've been doing the podcast for 3 years, and I need a break. I'm going to take a break as soon as I can. But yeah, it just goes to show you the amount of slog that's been going on. Taking it to another aspect here is that you still help in a different way in the committee at Belga to this day. So how has that kind of come about? Because on one hand, you're giving and time and energy and effort and sometimes monetary resources to this website, but now you're also a committee member as well. Like, when do you sleep, Jacob?
Yeah, nah, it's sometimes hard to find the time, but yeah, I mean, I'm more so on the Saturday side of the club, the professional competition, where others do more the juniors and the Sunday side. But now I update our Facebook page. I'm there Saturdays helping, you know, during the day, cleaning up. And, yeah, no, I mean, I love the club, so certainly happy to help. Our president, Ken Shorto, he's amazing. He does a lot of work too. So, yep.
So there's been this cool initiative that Belga's done that when I first heard about it, I absolutely loved it, right? Belga is in a completely working class area. It's in an incredibly diverse area where you've got people from all different backgrounds, some a little bit more hard pressed than others, but they've all kind of come together and been there for football. And I, as someone who grew up in an environment like that, I knew how important football was, being that kind of third place. And one of the things that you've done is you've kind of mitigated a lot of the pressures that families can have around football, because some families are being priced out at the moment. And you created this initiative around making sure that, you know, you didn't have to necessarily pay all of your junior fees. There are other ways to kind of get involved. Can you speak on how that kind of started and how that initiative has been working out?
Yeah, no, it was first discussed at the club in 2017. The idea of, because junior fees were already going through the roof, and we're not only talking NPL, even non-NPL, you know, we're talking still several hundred dollars. And, you know, some parents could not afford that, especially if they had two children that wanted to play the game. So, yeah, the idea was put, can we make it cheaper? And one of the ideas was fee-free football. So basically, if the parents became members of the club, which was $35 at the time, you could have up to three siblings play for free.
That's awesome.
It's evolved somewhat, you know, changed. You know, we had teething problems at the start, and, you know, but most people do the right thing. We've probably, you know, we've got our own junior committee now, had a lot more volunteers, and, yeah, most parents do the right thing. And, we've had people come in to help us, you know, from outside the area just because of that, of what we're doing.
And so the way it works is that if you become a member of the club, you just have to volunteer and kind of help out in club events?
Yeah, that's right. So you can volunteer that's how it basically works. And then, yeah, your children can play for free.
That's such an incredible initiative. And like I said, unfortunately for some, football ends up becoming this thing that you can be priced out at. Football becomes this thing where, especially as you get towards like the elite level, everybody seems to be one of those kids who's Western suburbs, whose mum drives a Range Rover, and they're the ones who are ending up getting the shots at glory and stuff like that. But that hasn't been the history of football. The history of football is a lot of working class kids, a lot of kids who don't have a lot, and football has been the most accessible sport that's out there, and that's where you're able to get a huge swath of talent. And like, you think about the story of like Robin or Van der Vaart and players who kind of grew up with nothing, who were spotted on the streets while a bus was going past. And the idea that you're still making sure that that is possible for people who have grown up, I just think it's terrific and I think it's fantastic. And I think more clubs should be able to do those initiatives to make football as accessible as possible.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And we're proud to say, and I'm not saying all clubs do that, but not 1 cent of our junior fees go to our senior players. So
don't get me started on that. That's a story for another day, especially when it's like, hey, come give these junior fees to these Div 2 jackasses to come and play. And half of these Div 2, I'll say it right now, half of you Div 2 jackasses wouldn't win the Sunday Amateur Prems. But we'll go into another aspect here. You know, when we talk about football, when we talk about the community, stuff like that, what are some of the things that you think that you think other clubs, other individuals, the federation, things that you think can be done to help contribute to our game from like a community perspective, from a professional perspective, from any perspective that you think will be just beneficial for our game here in WA? Casual Football Chats is a partnership between the Perth Football Podcast and the Casual Football Company. Casual Football Company run 25 casual games a week at venues across the entire metropolitan area. Casuals lets you rock up, play 90 minutes of non-stop football for $15 dues. There are no referees and no one keeps scores. It's not the World Cup final, which means that you can have a nice casual game with your friends, with mates, or with strangers. Games are played simply for the love of the game. All players are welcome. Check them out on Casual Football on all social media places that you can find them. They also have an app that you can get on iTunes or on Google Play Store. And remember, hashtag play because you love it and hashtag keep things casual.
Yeah, look, I think media exposure is probably one of the big things. Back in the day, and I'm talking even in the 90s, you know, you would open a paper, West Australian, on a Monday, all the results would be in there, there'd be an article, picture even, you know, in the Sunday Times too, and you don't see that anymore. Now, obviously, papers aren't as big as they were back in the day, so that's sort of understandable, but I think it's still something, because still people still do read them.
Yeah.
Still something to look at. Obviously, we're streaming more, I think.
Which is great, I think. It's terrific.
It's very good. I think some people are frustrated at the streaming service because there's no app for it. There's a lot of ads.
Yes.
So, and
got to pay for the streaming service somehow, guys.
You got to pay for it, but I think there's probably better ways of doing it. What that is, I don't know. But yeah, some way, you know, that the clubs can sort of generate more income too, and to bring more people in, because even though more people are playing our game more than ever, it's just not getting to the same levels, as nowhere near as the same levels as it was 20, 30 years ago.
Do you think we have too many clubs?
No, not really, because if you go back to the 80s, we had four divisions on a Saturday.
Wow.
We've only got three now. And obviously the city's much bigger, so you can sort of see why there are more clubs. Now, I think three divisions is still enough, don't get me wrong, on a Saturday. I think four would probably be too many.
Did we have as many amateur divisions, so to speak?
You probably had similar.
Yep.
Similar. Probably not as many social playing or masters. Certainly, definitely not masters. You wouldn't have had many of them. There's a lot more now. You've got over 45s,
yep,
et cetera, which you didn't have back then. So, yeah, it's just trying to get those people to come to local games. Now, you're up against a lot more stuff nowadays where, you know, back in the 80s, yeah, Saturday shopping would close at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, all the movies were in the city back then. You had no internet to compete with, so
there's no Netflix to compete with. You know, there's no PlayStation.
People, you know, what else was there to do but to go to a game on a Saturday afternoon?
Yep.
And so that definitely made a difference. You got a lot more of the ethnics back then who have now obviously
more established, and
more established, or they're much too old now to go to games, and where their children and grandchildren, you know, are not as interested. So that's another factor. There's no easy solution, I don't think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I find it fascinating. Like, you make such a good point, right? Because I always thought maybe we've got too many teams. Maybe instead of the, like, when you look at like Kingsway, Balga, East Perth are now there, Wanneroo and now there, like, you think about just that, you got Balladura, and I'm going, man, we're all just competing for resources. Maybe if there was half as many clubs, we could then go to the councils and say, can we actually get more resources, so to speak? But if you're saying, no, actually, like, this has been like this for years, we don't necessarily need to be doing it this way, there's actual better ways that we could potentially do it, like, that's where I think we could kind of do a little bit better. Because I look at football, or your football as you would call it, and like, their numbers aren't still the same as they used to be in the 80s, but they're still getting 500 people to games, and there's only like 12-13 teams in that top range of Waffle, and it kind of filters down.
Yeah.
And I always looked at like New Zealand, where maybe there's 25-30 clubs, but you might have 15, 16 different teams in that one club, and then you have a much bigger community feel. You turn up to the ground, and it's everybody that's there, from pro players all the way down to masters. Whereas, you know, I played amateurs for North Perth. Completely different environment to what we have here in Morley. Completely different feel. And that's where I'm going, okay, maybe this is like a bit wasted, because if we're all part of one bigger club, then maybe our dollar would go a little bit further or farther. Sorry.
Look, merging clubs, I'm certainly not against. Merging clubs in the past have not always worked. They've unmerged a lot of times.
Yes.
And
shout out to Belcata.
Yeah. You know, there's been several instances where that's happened and it hasn't worked. So, but then there has been some times where it has worked.
We look at Fremantle City right now, for example.
Yes, I mean, that's a joint venture, and, you know, bringing the old Tricolore into their fold with Fremantle United, who were a very strong amateur club. And then when they joined Saturdays, they wanted to get bigger, and joining forces with Tricolore was a great idea, and it's still working well. Then Kingsley joining with their Westside juniors as Kingsley Westside is another prime example. Definitely, I think clubs, you know, merging shouldn't be, you know, should be still encouraged, I think. But you have the problem too where some people walk away from those clubs, where it certainly happened with Tricolore when they merged with Azuri and Etna at the time, where a lot of them didn't want the merge to happen and didn't come back again. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's the other factor too, if you do that, where people love their club so much that it's just not the same anymore.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. So yeah, there's pros and, you know, and things that against it that, yeah.
Well, look, we'll finish off. I just finished speaking to Neil Bennett, and I asked him a pretty difficult question, and that question was, you've been covering women's football for a very, very long time. Can you give us an 11 of the best players that you think you've seen while you've been covering football? He thought about it. He gave us 11, and he sent me a text message with another like 5 or 6 players saying, oh my goodness, I forgot them. So it's never an easy question, but you go way back. You've been documenting the game. I've been talking about how Gustavo Maryland is the best player that I've ever seen in the NPL. I saw the back end of Ornofono in terms of how he just moved and how he played. And like you mentioned, you haven't been necessarily covering the top end of the NPL most recently, but from what you've seen, can you give us an 11 of footballers who you were just like, mate, you needed to see these guys?
Oh, look, I mean, you've got quite a bit of talent out there now. I mean, back in the day when I was watching more of the top league as a kid, you know, you had quality players. You know, the likes of Paul Wormley, who played for Florida Fina, and John Hunter. And
did you see Lazaridis?
I didn't personally see him. But yeah, he's another one that was
there at
definitely
the time. Yeah.
I think it was more in the night later in the 90s. Just to take 11 at the top of my head, but yeah, there's
it'd be too hard.
Yeah, I think it would be.
Well, that's a good way to not answer the question. In terms of Morley, in terms of Balga, do you know what happens next for these two clubs? What would you like to see happen for these clubs, especially knowing how close both of these clubs are to your heart?
Oh, well, for Balga, obviously,
NPL champions?
You can always hope, but I think we're a long way out that still. But look, we want to get promoted, whether it's this year or the next few years, you know. Get back to Division 1, which we haven't been since the 90s. So that is our aim, and just to keep our junior participation going up with our and keeping our fee-free football there. For Morley Windmills, hopefully they're on the right track after what happened last year. Basically had zero players in November, and John O'Reilly and Dan Evans has done an amazing job.
To even get the players, mate.
Not only to get the players, but to get players with a competitive team, you know, and they're looking good so far, and for the club to get the likes of John O'Reilly and Dan Evans, you know. John O'Reilly obviously been with Armidale in the NPL for a number of years, to get him down to the amateur premier is amazing in itself, and to get Dan Evans too, you know, who's been in the Saturday setup for many years too. And they've been doing good, and hopefully they can get back up as soon as possible.
Look, before we go, you mentioned that there's a big event happening for the good people at Bauga. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how we can get involved?
Yeah, so on Saturday the 4th of May, we've got our 40-year reunion where we're celebrating the year we got promoted to the top flight. We finished second in the, which was called the second division back then, or first division now, and top two went up back then. And yeah, we're bringing all the players, as many players as we can, not only players, but people that were involved at the club at the time, reserves under 17s as they were known then. And yeah, we've got a booklet, 24-page booklet on that season to give out to. And yeah, so we're hoping for a lot of those people coming down and yeah, remembering the good old days.
Well, look, that all sounds absolutely terrific, Jacob. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. Know that, you know, interviews aren't your thing. You kind of like to be behind the scenes and keep things ticking along. So really do appreciate it. Like I said, I don't think that the story of WA football and what's been happening most recently could be told without the contributions of yourself and the good people at footballwa.net. So thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. Let's go get ourselves some food and see if the boys in orange can get themselves a result.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.